So this week I'm talking to Richard G. Jones, our lighting designer here in the UK for the tour of the complete world of Sports Abridged. And Richard, you have designed lights for the West End, for Broadway, for national UK tours, for international tours, for theater shows, for arena shows. You're now designing lights for the Reduced Shakespeare Company. Richard, this is a bit of a come down for you, isn't it?
Oh, I don't think it's a come down. I've lit for SpongeBob SquarePants. I'm kind of comparing this show to a SpongeBob moment at the moment.
Favorably?
Oh, absolutely.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 291, Our Lighting Designer. Lighting designer Richard G. Jones has designed the beautiful lights for our UK production of The Complete World of Sports Abridged, and we are but a mere blip on the grand spectrum of his very cool international career. The hundreds of projects Richard has lit include the original John Doyle production of Sweeney Todd, both in England and on Broadway, where he won the Drama Desk Award for Outstanding Lighting Design, huge arena tours of the UK TV show Strictly Come Dancing, which we know in the States as Dancing with the Stars, and the award-winning production of The Railway Children, which originated in New York, then traveled to London and Toronto. So I started by asking Richard how the job of lighting designer changes from project to project.
Is the job the same for every job?
The job is, I'm a lighting designer. I find it very funny sometimes that I work with producers who go, you've lit this show on Broadway, you can't possibly want to light SpongeBob SquarePants the musical. And I've gone into a producer's office, which is what happened when I did SpongeBob, for instance, that I was doing Sweeney Todd on Broadway, and I went to Richard Frankel's office, and on the desk was SpongeBob SquarePants, and I was like, chat, because my nephew at the time was like really into SpongeBob, thinking it was amazing. And I was going, that's fantastic. And he was going, yeah, we're looking for a lighting design, do you know anybody? And I was like, hey, I could do that. And he went, but you just lit Sweeney Todd on Broadway? And I was like, yep, and I'm a lighting designer, so I can light that show. And actually, the greatest thing was, I did Sweeney on Broadway, to which my nephew actually didn't care.
Right.
A toss.
Right.
I can't know if I can say a toss, but he didn't care. And when I said I'm going to do this show, it's called SpongeBob SquarePants, suddenly I became the icon of my nephew. So that was a great thing to do.
No, it is. It is a good thing. It's funny. We do things for our kids and for our nephews and nieces.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I love it.
Absolutely. I want you to talk about the Sweeney experience, the Sweeney Todd experience, a little bit later. But how did you get started designing lights?
Well, I'm going to bore you slightly. When I started off, when I was 16, I went to my local theatre.
It was about 5 years ago.
Plus, and I went to my local theatre going, please, can I come and work here? And they were going, no, and my dad was like, you can't go and work at the theatre, you have to do a proper job. So it was like, okay, so I went to college and did electrical engineering. Because my dad kind of went, you've got to do something sensible. And then as soon as I finished the course, I went back to the theatre and went, can you give me a job? And they gave me a job called, at the time, it didn't really exist. In this country, we had a thing that was called a youth opportunity scheme. So basically, you didn't really have a job, and the government gave you a few pounds a week to kind of get through and live on.
But I love that here in the UK, it's called a scheme, as if there's something nefarious about it.
Ha, ha, ha. We're putting you on a scheme. It was exactly like that. So I went to I went and did a scheme, and I actually started off working in wardrobe. So the first thing I ever did, because I just wanted to work in theatre, I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I did 6 months working in wardrobe with a lady called Bridget Brown, who was amazing, and she taught me to cut, to make anything. I can still make shirts, trousers, everything you could possibly want. We did Shakespeare's, we did musicals. We were at the time, what we were doing was a thing called two weekly rep. So we had a company of actors for 6 months of maybe 10 actors who were in every single show, and every 2 weeks we did a different show. So we would do a show, it would turn around, they would open a show, we would start rehearsals, do the show, start the next show, they'd open it. It would just went on and endlessly. But from a training point of view, it was absolutely fantastic.
Well, that's the thing. Did you ever do any acting?
Yeah.
Well, see, but that's the thing. I think you learn in the theater by doing everything, yeah. by getting involved in every department. I mean, you have to understand how every other department works in order to do your job.
No, absolutely. I think that's absolutely right. I mean, I started in youth theatre when I was like 14, and that's what kind of made me go, actually, I want to work in theatre. I have no idea what I'm doing, yeah. but I want to work in theatre.
Yeah.
And great, you know, I'm older than 14 now, and I'm still working in theatre. So.
Well, that's the other thing. But is it, now you've worked in America as well. Is it easier to make a living in the theatre? Is it easier to work in the theatre here in the UK than it is in the US? Do you know?
I don't know. I think it's very different, to be perfectly honest. I've been very lucky. I'm freelance. I work pretty constantly in the UK.
The big thing for me would be...
I think there's a big difference with the amount of work, for instance, a UK lighting designer has to do to comparatively earn what an American lighting designer maybe has to do.
Right, because
there's all sorts of things about unions and all of those sorts of things.
And the pay scale is different.
The pay scale is different.
Yeah.
But equally, what I love about the UK is I can do a West End show, I can then go and work in a school, I can go do some teaching, and I love the fact that it's really varied.
Well, it's also concentrated here. You know, it's easy. The whole UK is as big as, what, California? You know, I mean, you can get around.
Absolutely. You can absolutely get around. And also, we do things really bizarrely very quickly sometimes. When you're producing a show or a musical, even if it's in the West End, you know, I've gone to the West End to do things, and you have 3 days.
Yeah.
And you go in, you fit up, you light it overnight, you tech it, you're doing your first preview within 3 or 4 days, and it may be something that we've transferred, but it's really quick, you know. And that's not necessarily the same, I don't think, in the States.
I think
it's quite different.
Yeah.
I enjoy that, because actually I quite like the fact that it's kind of pressured.
Well, and it's the community seems, because the country is smaller, the community seems smaller. So you go in the West End, you know almost everybody. You go in the regions, you know a lot of people.
Well, you know, absolutely, and you know, I know Davey and I know Matt, and it's all those things. I think people just kind of cross over a lot more. And I most probably do, you know, I've done quite a lot of regional theatre stuff as well, but it's really interesting. And I've taught a lot of drama schools and things, and actually it's great when you go into the West End and you see people that you've taught.
Yeah.
And in fact, you know, there's a guy I taught at drama school who now is head technician at the Royal Albert Hall, and it's just lovely that people that you've taught and worked with are doing actually really quite massive jobs in the UK.
Well, and maybe they can hire you.
Well, that's exactly why I got them in there.
So, yes, you've done a lot of, you know, proper theatre, but then, as you say, you've done SpongeBob, things like SpongeBob, and then what...
SpongeBob was proper theatre. I don't know what you're insinuating.
Oh, sorry, my apologies. But then you also did this arena show, a touring show of the television show, So You Think It Could Dance? What was it called?
So we have a show over here called Strictly Come Dancing. So in the States, it's called Dancing with the Stars, I think.
Yes.
And... we have a TV show, and we also, that spurred off into an arena show. So earlier this year I did the arena tour of Strictly Come Dancing, which was really interesting. Unbelievably pressured for everybody, in that everybody produces the show and starts... They do their show, it finishes in November on the TV. They kind of get their Christmas off, and then there's a week's rehearsal, and we have 3 days from fitting up to starting the arena tour, and they tour for a month of arena tour. So, you know, we have people like Jason Donovan in it, and it's a big cast. It was huge. I've never done an arena tour of that size before, and we were playing... smallest venue was 13,000 seats.
Wow.
And we were playing up to just over 18,000 at the O2. Big show, very pressured, great fun. We laughed a lot.
Who were some of the judges for this tour?
So we have a guy called Craig Oliver Hallward, who's a friend of mine, Australian judges on the TV. You have, I think on Dancing with the Stars, you have Bruno on Dancing with the Stars, same judge. And of course you have Len, who...
Oh.
does Dancing with the Stars, and Len was on it, and they were absolutely amazing. Watching Len, Bruno, and Craig do a Lady Gaga number in an arena was quite something.
Well, did you go out to every arena? Is this the kind of thing where you actually you design it and you let everybody else go off and do it, or do you go with?
Don't be ridiculous. We were touring. We toured for 40 performances, about 28 arenas, most probably. So I actually did the first three arenas and then basically handed it over. So good. Big show, but designing the basis of everything was toured. So.
But that's a measure of how high up you are in your field. You know, you don't have to go out like the rest of us.
Hello, my name is Catherine Bell, and I've been a fan of the Reduced Shakespeare Company since 2009. I've seen the sports show in 4 states and 2 countries, and you are listening to the Reduced Shakespeare podcast.
Where can you RSE the RSE? We're in the last half of our 5-week tour, the Iron Man half, according to Brian Dennehy, where we'll be playing these 15 venues in 16 cities in 17 days. Canterbury, Norwich, Derby, Hereford, Rhyl, Barnsley, Salford, Lichfield, Basingstoke, Crawley, Bedford, and Tewkesbury, before finally settling down for 6 weeks at the Arts Theatre in London. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information. You've had some experience doing environmental work because you did the Railway Children here in York that then transferred to London and then Toronto, I guess.
Yeah.
But with a real working steam engine, am I right?
Well, in York we have what's called the National Rail Museum, which has original steam trains from the 1800s. And Damien, Damien Cruden, who's the artistic director at York, 13 years ago when he came, kind of 2 years in, went, wouldn't it be great if we did the Railway Children with a real train? And of course, I was like, yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
But it took 10 years to convince the local council, the museum, this would be a great idea. And we did the show in the Rail Museum with an 88-ton steam train. And I don't know if you guys know the Railway Children movie, but the original carriage from the movie, which is 1800 carriage, which is called the Gentleman's Carriage, and it's stored at the Rail Museum. And they let us use the Silver Sterling, which is the most beautiful steam train you've ever seen, and the original carriage. And we did the show, and we built staging that looked like platforms with a track down the middle. And Damien and I remember doing this whole thing because the project was colossal, and everybody from the hit was so convinced it would work. And Damien and I were there shoveling gravel at like 11:30 at night, going, you know, we're shoveling gravel. And it's like, this is an artistic director and a lighting designer going, this is going to be fine, because we open tomorrow, but we actually do need to fill this gravel in, and nobody else is going to have time to do this.
We did ask for this, didn't we?
Yeah, and at the same time, you had the general manager and the chief executive screwing seat numbers on the seats in the venue.
Because you were creating the venue as well.
Creating a venue. There was no venue, so we started from scratch. And it was I knew it was a great show.
Yeah.
And it was the most amazing thing to have the audience in. And for the first time, an 88-ton lump of steel came at the end of Act 1.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. And people standing up screaming their heads off.
Yeah, I imagine that would be hard to top.
It's pretty hard to top.
Yeah.
I mean, it was lovely. We took it to Toronto earlier this year and we did...
With the same train?
With not the Silver Sterling.
Okay.
We actually have the Silver Sterling in London. So we've done the show 5 times now. So we did two years in the at York. Then we've had 2 years with the show in Waterloo. in what was the old Eurostar terminal. But when we took the show to Waterloo, we actually took the same train down. But because it was so old, nobody would insure the undercarriage. So we had this whole thing where the entire train was put on a low load of truck and driven down by road. So it took something like 5 days to get down, because it could only get like maybe 30 miles, have to pull off the motorway during the day, and then at night come back onto the motorway, travel another 30 miles, pull off the motorway, until it got to Clapham Junction, where they could get back onto tracks and then push it into Waterloo. So that was kind of quite extraordinary, really.
Yeah, just huge logistical.
Yeah, and it was great. And people who, and we're people from York were travelling down, and people from all over the UK were coming down to see it at Waterloo. And it was magical. And, you know, it was a real steam train. Health and safety in the UK, we weren't allowed to, obviously, to fire the engine up. But I dare anybody to not think it was a real steam train.
That's so funny.
You know, it's wonderful.
How different is it coming from the UK to the US? Are there differences? Do we do things differently? I mean, now you're working with three Americans. How is it? Is that... do you have to talk slower because we're dumb? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah. No, it is quite different. I suppose I have to kind of heart pat to Sweeney, because that was the biggest kind of thing I did in the States.
So, and the Sweeney we're talking about is the John Doyle directed production of Sweeney Todd, where the actors played the instruments. The actors were also the orchestras, well famous, and now they've done Company in this way, and I think they might be doing several Mac and Mabel in this way. They've done it's a great gimmick. But you were in on the beginning of it here in the UK with John Doyle.
Yeah, so we did the UK version. I can't remember how long ago now. We're talking nearly 10 years ago. And we did it in a venue in the UK called the Watermill, which is a tiny 250-seater. Exactly what you might think. It's a watermill. So the water runs under the auditorium with the mill wheel still there. And it's a wooden, beautiful building. And we did a show in there in the tiniest space with 10 actors all playing the music, and they rehearsed for 3 weeks. They learnt every single note of music, and I remember the first night all of us just being petrified. They learnt a Stephen Sondheim score in 3 weeks.
And Stephen Sondheim music is not easy.
No, yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
it isn't easy.
Yeah.
And it was just it was really interesting. We did the show there, and it was a really massive learning curve. So I think we played there for 8 weeks, so everybody suddenly got really comfortable working with it, and then we were picked up and the show went on tour, and then it went to the West End into 2 venues, and we played in the West End for 9 months or so. And then very bizarrely, we were coming to the end of the run in the West End, and there was this colossal kind of panic going around, people going, "This is something's happening. And Stephen Sondheim turned up literally on the last week of the run in the West End, to which everybody kind of freaked out, because it was like there wasn't an orchestra, and things have been cut down and changed, and we all thought, oh my god, what's going to happen? And very interestingly, well, not very interesting, because we all thought it, he absolutely loved it. And suddenly, like day after he'd seen it and had gone, "This is fantastic, can I meet everybody?" Because everybody had been told he doesn't want to see any members of cast, he's just coming to see the show. So it was slightly freaky. He watched the show and asked to meet everybody in the cast. And great praise, loved the show. Within the next day, there were three American producers wanting to produce a show on Broadway. So suddenly, that was quite interesting, because I don't know how that works, to be honest. I don't know how the fact that suddenly Sondheim can go, "This is going to happen," and it happens. And then, slightly weird story, but I originally wasn't going out with it, because they were only going to take, because we didn't take the English cast, it was going to be produced out in the States, and originally it was just John and Sarah going out with it, and I was like, that's a little bit annoying, but hey, that would have been my lovely Broadway break. And sometime, this is what I've heard from the office, said, I want the show to look exactly like it did in the UK. So that was fabulous for me, and it was like a really lovely break to go out and to work with some amazing people. So, you know, we had Patti LuPone playing Mrs. Lovett, Michael Cerveris as Sweeney, and a wonderful, amazing cast. But the big difference being we had much longer rehearsal period than we would ever have in the UK. We had a much longer tech period and the longest previews I've ever known. I'm so used to, like, we opened the show over here and we had a month of previews. So literally I was like, I can't stay here and watch a month of previews. So eventually when we got the show on, I was like, I'm going back to the UK, I'm going to light another show. So I went back to the UK, lit actually two shows, flew back for the final previews before we kind of sealed the show and went into production period.
Well, and you were telling us about the tech, I guess we do techs differently in the US than you do here in the UK.
Yeah, it is very different. And John and I were very, you know, we want to...
John Doyle, the director.
John Doyle, sorry. We want to run the show as who would normally do it. So the whole process in the UK is that I would watch rehearsals and I would just light the show with no actors. So we were, I know, we'd done the show for 4 years by this point. So I was very happy to do that. And the actors loved it. Because I hadn't realised really in the States, and I was talking to Michael Cerveris, who said, thank you for giving us the day off, because, you know, he'd done a show, and I think he was at the Roundabout doing a show, and he said, oh, you know, I'd stood on stage for 12 hours, and it's just so lovely to have a day off, and then come back and you've done some magic-y things around us, you know.
Well, it's not the best use of the actor's time, whether they're Michael Cerveris or anybody.
I think you're absolutely right, and I kind of think that's our feeling in the UK, is my job is to, you know, make all that work for the actors, and we don't need, I don't need them there to light a show.
So how did it go when you were lighting it with your assistant who was running the board, and then when Ms. LuPone came in?
Well, it was really interesting. We had quite an interesting plot session on the day where I think a few people were thinking, you know, how can this possibly work? There are no actors. This is going to be a disaster. And then it was like, it got to the end of the night, and I was feeling slightly depressed by it, but not in a really bad way. I was just thinking, oh my god, what's happened? And the next day we started the tech at 10 a.m. and we started the show
with the actors,
with all the actors obviously in costume, and some of that was a bit strange because they were like, we're in costume for the whole tech, and we're like, yep. And so it's like full costume, full makeup. We started the tech, and I don't know if anybody saw the show, but really it was lots and lots of specials. So something would happen and a light would come up on somebody's face, somebody would be playing an instrument, a light would start on an instrument and open out, and it was very, very, very specific, which we'd lit without anybody on stage. And we started the tech, overture started, and we ran the first 25 minutes and did not stop once. Things were wrong, and John and I knew they were wrong, and actually when you work with somebody so long, it's really interesting that somebody can just turn around and look at you, and I just went, you know, I would just go, yeah, it's fine, it's fine.
You both understand.
We both understood. Yeah. You know, we knew the timing wasn't right, but actually what we wanted to see was what the whole thing was like.
Yeah.
So we ran the first 25 minutes, great, and John went, okay, let's just stop and have a coffee break. And of course, what I was never used to was 20 producers sat behind you. So we had, you know, all the Franklin office and all these producers sat behind. And we stopped the tech, and Patti was fantastic. She turned around and she walked downstage, and she came to the front and said, can I have the house lights? I can't do a Patti accent, so she said, can I have the house lights?
Uh-oh.
And we all kind of went, oh my God, what's she going to say? And she said, which is fabulous, she said, in 25 years of working on Broadway, I've never got through the first 20 minutes of a tech. We should learn something by these bloody Brits. So it was rather lovely, to say the least.
Did you get to hang out with Stephen Sondheim? Did you get to go to his house? Did you have any personal interaction with him? The great man?
Yeah. I mean, I love everything that Stephen Sondheim does. So it was amazing to go out there anyway. And then the run-through of Sweeney, I was in the rehearsal room, and Stephen Sondheim walks in, you just think... oh my God, it is Stephen Sondheim. And he sits down with a copy of the New York Times to start kind of vaguely writing notes in the columns. So I leant over and went, would you like some paper? And he was, and it was actually really interesting, because I just, you know, he's such a fabulous person.
And an icon of the theatre.
Icon.
Yeah.
And he's actually quite a shy guy, you know. And I think everybody says that. And it's just really interesting that, you know, and he was very humble and went, oh, that's lovely. And it was just lovely to see him watch this rehearsal that everybody was terrified about, because we were doing an acting musician production of the show. And we did the run through, and we got to the end of the run, and everybody was slightly terrified. Even Patty before gone, he'll either love it or hate it, and you know, all of those things. And at the end of it, the first thing he did was he turned to Sarah, who was our orchestrator, and I don't know if I can say this, but Sondheim said, the orchestrations were fucking awesome. And I kind of went, that's amazing. I've just sat in a room where Sondheim has said fucking,
yeah.
And also he loved it.
And amazing.
And amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, then, you know, we got through all our tech period, and we got invited to the a party at his house on the Friday after we opened the show. And it was unbelievable. It was we get invited to this brownstone house that you're going, where the hell am I? And it had scaffolding out the front, and you go in, and he was just charming, and the whole experience was wonderful. And of course, what then happens is all the actors initially are charging at the spiral staircase to the room with the piano in.
Right.
And of course, you follow on up, and then you go, oh my God, how many awards can you possibly have won in your life?
And they're all on the walls on the show.
On the walls. And of course, all you want to do is like take your photo in front of them,
yeah,
to show your mother,
yeah,
which of course we all did.
Yeah.
And it was fabulous then just to sit and chat and just talk about the things that I talked about earlier, about how I started in theatre and my dad being a miner and my dad being in the being a steam train driver,
yeah, yeah,
and just normal kind of things that you kind of go, this is actually fantastic.
And just hanging with him like a bloke,
like a proper bloke.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your Stephen Sondheim stories via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to Webmaster Matt Rippey, Lights Off But Nobody's Home designer Matthew Croke, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Gabe Harshman. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to our Twitter follower Bird Mischief, also known as Catherine Bell, for traveling far and wide to see us. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 291/873 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
And it really broke the ice. It was wonderful. And actually, people that have been a bit, you know, why are you doing it like this? It was great, because they suddenly came down and went, I'm really sorry, you do know what you're doing. And all that. And they're like, yeah. And it is odd, because the union is so different.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't have that kind of unionization thing. And I completely understand it. But also, you know, I was going, I'm only coming over to do my job. I don't want your job. It's all those, you know, it's just kind of, let's get on with it.
Yeah.
Let's get a show on.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.